Join Alaska Public Media for its next Community Advisory Board meeting, including a discussion of the technological operations and facilities at the Elmo Sackett Broadcast Center with Alaska Public Media's Chief Technology Officer as your guide. The next meeting is in person only here at the station Wednesday, February 11th at 6 p.m. Email cab@alaskapublic.org for more information. Thank you.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Kim Sherry tours the Cook Inlet Tribal Council's Denelchin Fab Lab to see how the program's students get access to high-tech equipment like 3D printers, laser cutters, and CNC machines. We'll find out the kinds of things they work on while applying their skills to connect with traditional knowledge and beyond. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with Rasmussen Individual Artist Award winner Addie Studebaker. We'll hear about her unique public works and find out what she has in store for the future. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, on Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Today on Hometown Alaska, join us as we step inside Cook Inlet Tribal Council's Denelchin Fab Lab, where Alaska Native youth are exploring cutting-edge technology and hands-on creativity. We'll talk with the CITC staff about their mission, the programs shaping future leaders, and the incredible projects happening in the lab. Don't miss this inspiring behind-the-scenes tour of innovation, culture, and community. Cook Inlet Tribal Council is a nonprofit organization that serves Alaska Native and Native American people in the Anchorage and Cook Inlet region through programs focused on education, employment, recovery, and family support. Its mission centers on empowering individuals and strengthening community wellness, culture, and self-determination. The Denelchin Fab Lab is part of CITC's education and youth development efforts, offering a hands-on, high-tech space where students explore STEM, digital fabrication, and creative problem-solving. Together, they support the next generation by blending innovation, culture, and learning in a way that uplifts the whole community. Today, we will learn about the Denelchin Fab Lab with Zoe Anilin, Ala Johnson, and Benjamin Schleifman. Would you all be so kind as to introduce yourselves?
I am Zoe Anilin. I'm Yupik from Bristol Bay, New Haven, and I've been here for almost 2 years, 2 years in January, and I am a program supervisor for the Nuninu team.
Waka, my name is Ala. I am from Bristol Bay as well, Dillingham. I am a Fab Lab instructor here at the Fab Lab.
Kaharantla at New Khatuasak, yes, Nakhatsati, Ishkitana Khat. My name is Benjamin. I am a Fab Lab instructor for 4 years.
For those who have never heard of it, what is the Denelchin Fab Lab and how did it get started?
So Denelchin Labs is part of the youth education team. It's actually our home base. Youth education is the department in which we serve. It services our students from kindergarten, pre-K really, all the way through high school and just beyond for internships and the entrepreneurship program. So we had kindergartners all the way through roughly college age. And we service them through academic tutoring, sometimes financial assistance, having a culturally responsive place in which they could learn STEM lessons, and just a place for them to be safe and indigenous in a city that's oftentimes not welcoming.
Can you walk us through what we're going to see here and what students typically do in the Fab Lab?
Yeah, we actually invite people, our students, to come in, and they're usually here for programming, which means elementary, middle school, or high school programming we currently run right now. We have a middle school program that runs in the morning, and they focus on academic support, and they also do some Fab Lab activities when those students are all caught up. And then we also have high school after school and also elementary after school programming. And in those programs, we do academic support as well and a lot of cultural specific STEM lessons.
What kind of technology and tools do students get to work with here that we might be seeing? 3D printers, robotics? What all do you guys have?
We have 3D printers. We have a CNC machine. We have a laser cutter. We have computers that the kids could use. And we have a media room.
What kind of skills are your students learning when they use this equipment?
Our students learn any number of different skills, from just basic communication to G-code programming. G-code is the code used in all laser cutters, CNCs, 3D printers. The potentiality of them gaining meaningful employment outside of here and bringing it into a workforce is pretty fun. CNCing is currently the industry standard for fabrication, oil fields, and everything that supports them. So, with that in mind, none of us are actually here trying to train the next generation of oil field workers. We are trying to build up our own community so that they're the people in charge of the really important things in life, such as tribal governance, educational development, anything that, you know, we've historically been underrepresented in as a community. It's building blocks and foundational skills that we try to really instill in our students and our community that in the end get us to where we would like to be.
Very well said, and I feel like with that we should begin our tour. Sound good?
Sounds good. Great. Okay. Sitting here is really
uncomfortable. Yeah. Hard time sitting. We're better walking
really?
And talking.
So as we walk into the Fab Lab, I'm going to turn right here, and we're entering this very large room. There's a lot of desks and chairs where it looks like some tutorials can happen. I'm also seeing a lot of these big machines. It says, like, lasers type things, and there's a really huge one in the corner. What the heck are these machines, you guys?
To quote Dr. Evil, they're lasers. We have everything from desktop lasers to industrial lasers. Each one has their own purpose. The very small one we see over here is very much a rapid prototyping, meaning you get an idea and you just need to do a small version to see how things work. And small lasers are great for that. Industrial lasers are meant for production. So our large-scale lasers are designed to be used 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are not a production facility, something we should absolutely point out. We get asked all the time to produce things for different organizations, be it within CITC or within the Siri family of subsidiaries. We don't do that kind of work. We're here to support our student populace. And the lasers do that through CBIs, which is a culturally based instructional unit that we develop here on site using indigenous knowledge and modern day fabrication techniques. We use the lasers to create educational kits, basically.
Would you be able to give us some examples of some of the things students have created here?
Yeah, some of the students have created some kayaks, and they put them together with wood glue, and then we can sew on some seconite. And they have a kayak model. And then we've also done dance fans. And also those students learned how to native dance as well. We also do acrylic cutouts on the lasers. And we've been making Christmas ornaments.
All right. Is there any other information about this area that you guys want to give us?
This area is also used for our morning program with the middle school students. This is where they get their academic support. So the kids line up here. They can get breakfast in the back. And then this is where they get homework help.
And we didn't touch on this before, I don't think, but like, how do you get word out to elementary, to middle school, to high schools that this is available to them?
We had an outreach coordinator that we worked with, and then we also, the schools that we want to target, we go and do outreach there during like lunches. We go to their staff meetings if we're invited, and then we just hand out flyers, and then we do a really big push at the beginning of the school year to enroll students. It's called our Back to School Night, and families can come, and we do projects and things, and that's some ways we get the word out.
And if someone hears our story here today and they were interested in getting their child or grandchild or niece or nephew into the program, how would they go about doing that? Where could they find more information?
CITC.org is our primary website, and you can enroll with us through there. You do need proof of indigeneity, so a CIB or tribal enrollment card. Yeah, I think that's it.
And is it only CITC enrollees that can be a part of the program, or is it any Alaska Native student throughout the state?
So CITC, common misconception is we are not actually a tribal entity. We are a not-for-profit subsidy underneath CIRI, which is a regional corporation. We fill a large gap in the Anchorage area where a federally recognized tribe would typically host services for medical, for vocational training, education. Because Anchorage does not have a federally recognized tribe, we fill that gap. So we are one of the most diverse tribal entities in the country because Anchorage is one of the most diverse cities in the country. Yeah, so you do not need to be Alaska Native, just American Indian or Alaska Native.
So we've walked through a few halls and entered a room that is the plastic recycling room, and I'm seeing this big contraption in the middle of the floor with some yellow and black tape around it saying, don't get close. And to me, this almost looks like a giant heat press, but what is it?
It definitely is a giant heat press. So we use this heat press to make plastic plywood, essentially. So we make sheets of plastic that we can then turn into different things in-house. We've made, we have a little stool in-house. We've made little totes. Students have made different ornaments out of them. And then we also have all the shredded plastic here that we put into a shredder. We here at the Denelchen Fab Lab take number 2 and number 5 recyclable plastics. And we then put them through our shredder, make small little pieces. And then from those small little pieces, we can make, we call it plumber. So it's plastic lumber. And we can make sheets of it. And then we also have an injection mold that we can make 1x2s, 2x4s possibly. Do have the injection mold back here, and we can make 2x4 plumber is what we call it. And we have a whole table in the wood shop that was made out of 2x4 plumber. Here is all clogged up with plastic because this is the injection molder, and that's where we connect the frame for the plumber to fill in. It looks like a piece of bed frame, but it's hollow, and we get to fill it with the plastic, these plastic sheets here.
So at the end of the room, we're looking at this machine, and this is where the actual little recycled pieces of plastic go, and they get dumped down through this hopper and into this pipe where they're shot out into whatever mold they're making right now, whatever they need to make. Molten plastic. And what one of the things we're seeing right here is some of the plumber, yes? And it's really colorful. It has, I mean, pretty much any color you could imagine is in it. And so if you have a sheet of this plumber, like what would be made from it? What would you guys do with that?
We are in the process of taking that plastic sheet and developing fabric patterns for sewing regalia from cuffs to clinket vests. It is currently our only renewable resource, plastic, so we might as well make the best out of it.
Okay, so you say you take certain recyclable plastics. Do you look for donations, or do you guys have plenty? Like, if someone wanted to donate, would you take it? How would they go about doing that?
We do. We do take number 2s and number 5s. So if you look on, usually on the bottom of your plastics in the little triangle, it should have the number 2 or number 5 in it. And we take clean, washed out, dried plastic. And then we ask for it to be clean and dried out just because we put it through the shredder to shred it up to make our plumber.
So they would just drop it off right at the front desk here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, please just drop it off, ring the doorbell, and we'll let you in. And we have a collection tote out in the front that you don't even have to come in any further.
Okay, and as we walk into the next room, We are seeing, it looks to be maybe like a spray painting area. There's a little, or I should say a big, I'd say a like utility size elevator box with some padding in the back. And what do you use this area for?
Well, this is called a paint booth, and it vents, so it ventilates everything out of the building. When we turn on the vents, we can come in here and we can spray projects. We can do resin in here. So certain projects are meant to do in here because of just the smell, and that we can vent it and be properly vented out of the building and keep everybody safe.
We don't want to be inhaling those fumes.
No, not
at all. Very bad.
And then right behind the paint booth is where we keep all our resin, and we do a lot of resin projects with our students. It's one of the biggest, the funnest and biggest requests that we have most of the time.
Could you give some examples of what one of the resin projects might be?
So we always try to give options to our participants, and we had, I have a coworker that had made earrings out of Tana earrings and also Uluak earrings. And he made them cut out so that we can pour resin into them. So it was a really cool project that students were really excited about making their loved ones or someone that they know that has pierced ears or even a necklace so that they can bring it home and gift it. And also, we also do Kaktovik numeral clocks, and that's really popular. We use the Kaktovik numerals and we make a clock, and then we pour the resin over the face of the clock and put in all the mechanical parts, and you have a working clock.
So the next room we're going into is, I would call this a wood shop. I actually took wood shop in high school, and my husband works with tools a lot, and I'm recognizing some, like, it looks like sanding equipment, some saws. What all do we do in this room?
So I've always said that the wood shop is where students learn STEM in real time. All the equipment that we have elsewhere in the facility goes obsolete really quickly. The vast majority of the equipment in this room, the bandsaws, the planers, the sanding equipment, they've gone relatively unchanged for about 100 years at this point. It really gives students and participants alike an opportunity to work with their hands versus work in a computer. Anytime you're designing for modern fabrication, you're on a computer. The equipment does all the work for you 9 times out of 10. In this space, you are really, really playing in real time and getting something unique and wonderful that only happens when you express yourself with your hands. Currently, we are working on cedar bark weaving. Students are learning how to weave cedar bark on hydroponic baskets until we can get enough material to weave hats. It's also a really good introductory project just to learn the weaving technique itself. And we have 3D printed hat forms that they'll be making themselves. We do drums, traditionally steamed or cut from pieces that students had to do the geometry to get the exact miter. We do music in here. Ella and I have hosted traditional medicine camps in here.
Okay, so I'm seeing a few drums here from like a smaller size to this. This has to be 3.5 feet wide. I mean, it's ginormous. Can one of you describe this to me? Was it made here? Oh, and maybe we'll listen to a little bit of drumming too.
So you were close. This is 35 1/2 inch wide before the skin got stretched over and exactly 36 inches after the skin. It's just a fun example of taking something small. Most of our students get a 16-inch drum and making it needlessly big. Most tribes in the state have a history of musical instruments, drums being the universal instrument. We just wanted something that would be very large and call to attention the capacity of what we can do and can create, and really just let our students know that any size drum is important. Making something really big is fun.
Can you tell us what the skin is and what the wood is, how it came together?
The wood is red cedar donated through Sea Alaska Timber down in Prince of Wales Island. The skin, I believe, is cowhide. It's something we've had hanging around from our old facility to the new one. We've been here for 3 years now. I was just tired of seeing it bounce from one corner of the facility to the next, so we made a very large drum out of it. The inside is routed out so that we can put in LED light strips, and something called a pezzometer, so that when the drum hits, the vibration illuminates the LEDs. And we did intentionally scrape the hide so it's translucent, so that the lights will shine through. This is one of those projects that we do just to inspire our participants versus something that has a lot of daily use.
Do you have students come in and see this drum and they're like, yes, I want to make that?
That's one of the joys of doing a job like this. We are paid to be creative and hopefully inspire other people to be creative as well.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm host Kim Sherry. After the break, we'll continue learning about Cook Inlet Tribal Council's Fab Lab.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news on Alaska News Nightly or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Kim Sherry, speaking with Zoe, Ala, and Benjamin in the Fab Lab. So can I ask each of you, so far out of everything you've worked on, what's been one of your favorite projects?
My favorite project was working with my high school students and teaching them how to sew, and not just hand stitch, but also how to sew on a sewing machine and troubleshoot their sewing machines. So I taught students how to make gusbucks and tichluks, depending on their culture. And then they know how to sew. So they know how to cut out patterns, they know how to make patterns, and they can troubleshoot and fix your sewing machine. So I was really proud that we had a group of students that learned how to do everything from start to finish.
That's awesome. How about you, Zoe?
My favorite items from the Fab Lab was a camp for elementary students, and Ella laser cut out dance fans for all the students, and that was really cool. They got to decorate them, and then we glued them, we put the little feathers on, and they were so happy to take them home.
And lastly, Benjamin.
We recently hosted a CTE program, so Career Technology Exploration, with a group of UPIC students from the Lower Yukon Kuskokwim, and they designed their traditional style paddles, and then we CNC'd them out. After they were CNC'd out, we gave them hand carving tools, so tools that our ancestors would have absolutely recognized, and they finished their paddles with hand tools. Super rewarding, super fun. As a carver, that's the ideal route.
So were these students not from the Anchorage area, but they came from a different area to participate? And do you have students doing that very often, coming from different areas of Alaska?
Something we are definitely gearing up more for. It's not the most typical because interagency cooperation, especially in education, is challenging at best. That being said, in the current state of things, I think we're going to see more and more of this sort of cooperation.
All right, so in this very large room with a lot of stuff going on, is there anything else you guys wanted to point out that the kids work on or that you really enjoy doing?
I've always said that if you provide students a safe, healthy environment to learn how to use these tools, they will thrive. And 3 years here, we have had zero injuries.
I think that's very important to point out. Yeah, that's good. That's great. And we're all knocking on wood. So we're entering the CNC room here. And the first thing I'm noticing is a really large machine in the middle with some, looks like plywood on it. And I work at a school sometimes, and they have a machine called a die cut machine. And this very much reminds me of it, just on a gigantic scale. Does anyone want to talk about this room? And also, just for people who don't know, what is CNC? Because that was actually my question. What are we talking about even?
So CNCing is computer numeric control. It can be done with anything from a laser to a router head. So our specific tools are very much router-based, using something that looks like a drill bit, but really is not a drill bit. It's designed to plunge in a very controlled, slow manner, cut out in usually two dimensions, though, depending on the skill of the fabricator, you can absolutely do very intricate depth and field changes. For most of our purposes, we're doing a two-dimensional, what would you call that, Ella? Like a profile cut?
Yeah.
So pretty introductory. We just don't have a lot of time with our students, not as much as we would like. So we are jumping in from the industrial machines, which we have four of, to two relatively small 4-foot by 4-foot tabletop ones. The three small ones are in fact industrial, but they were designed for airplane mechanics and jewelers. So we have everything from a 9-square-inch build plate to a 32-foot square foot build plate. It's a lot of fun. It's loud. Students get a kick out of it. We love these spaces. Like, these are the spaces we want people to be in and explore. It's challenging.
So what kind of benefits do students get from learning how to work on these machines and going through the steps and the processes? Are there future employment opportunities that could come from just knowledge of how to work these machines?
Not just future, but current. CNCing is the industry standard, like I said, through plasma-based, through router bit, through laser cutting. For the most part, these machines are all built on the same concept of computer numeric control, meaning it just does what you tell it to do. The means in which it does it is entirely up to the operator and the company. But in Alaska in general, I mean, the pipeline fields and the oil industry require CNCing to create anything from the pigs necessary to clean out the pipeline itself to making a new table for a workshop. It's just as simple as that. It is as diverse and robust a tool as you need it to be. Outside of industrial fields, the artistic expression you can do with these machines is amazing. About once a month, at least, we get asked by local artists to fabricate one of their designs for large-scale viewing. And unfortunately, we are not a production facility. So we don't get to do those really amazing projects with local artists. But with as many artists as we have on hand, we've had a bit of a chance to play with what we can and can't do with these machines. Yeah, they're fun. They're expressive, they're industrial, they're really, really diverse in what they can do.
So we've just walked into what looks to be the 3D printing lab, and this I'm pretty sure of all the machines that I've seen so far. So we're looking in the printer right now, and it's printing out in orange, just these little 3D things. Who wants to talk about the 3D printing lab? This is cool.
So this is our 3D print lab. We have a few different type of 3D printers. Back left corner, we have a nylon 3D printer, which takes powdered nylon and reads the file that you have uploaded into it and fuses those little pieces of nylon powder together to make a really cool sturdy print. Back right, we have resin. So the resin is a liquid, and it's a vat of liquid, and then your file, you send your file to that printer, and it a laser goes up and hardens that resin in that file. And then after you get the resin project out, you have to wash it. It's a denatured alcohol wash.
And then once it's out of the wash, we put it in the curing. I call it the microwave because it looks exactly like a microwave. It does the little spinny in the round. And you put it in there for about 10 minutes, and it dries it out and cures it and hardens it so it's ready to go. And then all along this wall and all along the wall to the right and the left, both walls, are just plastic PLA print 3D printers. We have many different kinds. We have bamboos, we have MakerBots. We are actually going to be getting brand new 3D printers soon. We have some Roland printers. These are the big printers that we can make posters out of. We can make banners out of. We can make stickers. And we are not a copy-paste facility. So everybody that comes in here, any participant that comes in here, has to design their own projects. We will not copy-paste. They will design their own projects. So these little orange 3D prints here are actually prints that we had some elementary students print out a little gift for their family for holiday. So one more printer we have here is the direct-to-garment sublimation printer, and that's a really cool printer. We can get the sublimation. We can put it on hats, on T-shirts, on bags, on mugs, water bottles, puzzles. So we can print and sublimate on a lot of really cool stuff.
We have seen so many amazing things here at the Fab Lab. There's another question that I want to ask each of you individually. And we've heard about your favorite projects that you've been a part of, but what do you think your most meaningful moment you've had here with a student is?
We had a student in our after-school club. She came from rural Alaska, and she was failing all her classes. She came every day. We helped her. She did all the work. She just didn't know how to turn it in, because coming from rural Alaska, you don't really know, like, the new process of urban. And we helped her get caught up. And then she didn't like to go to school, but our program was after school. So she would go to school just to come here and be here. So that's my favorite story.
A meaningful moment that I had was a student in my programming. We do a lot of cultural introductions. So we like to say our name and where we're from, or where we know our family is from. We like to know their culture if they know it. We like to know what school they're going to. And this student has been in program, we call them an OG of programming. They've been in programming for a really long time. And they didn't like to do their introduction. They literally would say pass. And then I got them to say their first name the first year I was here. And now they will say everything. Now they come into programming and they will tell you where their family's from, what their culture is, where they go to school. So yeah, it's really big moments like that. Those are the moments that make me know that I'm in the right place.
We have a lot of meaningful moments here. I think most of us who work here because it's providing a space that we wish we had had as children or as students or as young adults. The biggest win this year was when one of our previous graduates got a job with us and has been with us since May. Providing opportunities like that where they're not going to get those opportunities elsewhere that really make what we do worthwhile.
So we just walked into the media room, and you could tell there's kind of like soundproofing, I think it is, around. There's a very large TV, computer, there's a microphone. I'm guessing that this is a really fun space to work in. Who'd like to talk about it? Zoe?
I don't normally come in here, but I've seen what we did in here. We listened to music. There is a former staff who did music with the students in our after school club. They would listen to music, rate them, and then edit what they talked about. And then this last year, we had a staff do a media camp where students got to take videos, pictures, and create a whole movie about just whatever they wanted. And then at the end of the camp, we got to watch all their videos, and it was really fun to see that.
So when students come into this space, what all can they do with it?
Students come in here, and we do some podcasting. We do a lot of editing, music making. They like to make beats. Some of these kids get proud to make beats. And then we do some stop motion and small filmmaking.
So can I ask each of you individually what you hope youth take away from their experience here?
I hope when our participants come into programming, they feel safe and they know that they can come in and feel safe and be in a safe place and get something to eat and just be able to be surrounded by people that care for them and get some help with homework or even make a project.
Something that I hope the youth take away from their experiences here is that they always have somewhere they can go. They always have adults in their life that they know care about them and are willing to support them, and that they can come and be here. And Nuninyo actually means you came back, so getting the kids back in Dena'ina or Dena'ina. So we just hope the kids keep coming back and they want to be here.
One of the things I stress every day working with students is that our ancestors, our collective Alaska Native ancestors, it doesn't matter if they're Tlingit, Haida, Nupak, Yupik, Kwich'in, all of our ancestry were masters of STEM before the acronym ever existed. You simply cannot thrive in these environments without having a mastery of science, mathematics, technology, engineering. Our ancestors understood these things. They explored. They did scientific method. All these things long before European contact. So with that sort of ancestral push, we can still do amazing things, and we need to do amazing things.
Is there anything else you guys want to add about the Fab Lab or Cook Inlet Tribal Council's youth support initiatives? Anything that you'd like to put out there to the public?
It's a common misconception that the Nelchin Labs is just the Fab Lab. We encompass a lot of different programming. Some of it's fabrication-based, some of it's early childhood development, a lot of it's based in Western pedagogy of teaching children how to read. The fabrication is just a small portion of what we do here, and it's doing the rest of our team a huge disservice when we just focus on shiny toys. I like the attention, being a Fab Lab instructor, but the rest of our team brings in more grant money and services our students more hours per week than Fab Lab. So it is fun, but in the grand scheme of things, the Fab Lab itself is kind of insignificant to the rest of the programming we do here.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm host Kim Sherry. After this break, we'll be back with State of Art.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear from Rasmussen Individual Artist Award winner Addie Studebaker. Living in the Matsu Valley, Studebaker tends to focus on community-based or public art, often incorporating bright colors and diverse mediums. In addition to her artistic pursuits, she's a mom, a teacher, and a writer. Growing up in a pragmatic Midwest household influenced her artistic goals and her desire to maintain her own identity. I first met her at the International Gallery of Contemporary Art last year, where she had a public exhibition called Unstuck. Visitors were invited to decorate the blank white walls of the gallery with colorful tape, either creating their own designs or adding to others' work. The walls were covered with everything from rudimentary images to messages for other visitors.
So it was really just kind of reducing us all to this sort of like childish, like, oh, it's hard to rip this and this is sticking to the scissors. And like, what about this isn't even sticking on the wall. It's falling off. So it was fun to just, we all felt a little like out of our element, right? That's what I noticed with the tape. Yeah. But also people ran with it. They made these amazing portraits. They stood there for, you know, almost an hour making these masterpieces, taking pictures of it. And like, it was just really fun. It was fun to see people. And that's exactly what I was hoping for, was something where you really got stuck in this like flow zone, right? But at the same sense, sort of unstuck yourself from whatever was going on. And even just the idea of like coming together with other people, you don't know them or what their beliefs are, or like where they stand, wherever. We're all just standing around struggling with this tape. So it was really fun in that way. And I think it was, in that sense, it was a great success for me to see. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, it was just cool. Like, and I think this is also maybe kind of somewhat of a through line that I've seen with your art, is the variety of colors. I mean, just scrolling through like your Instagram, the various things you've produced, you tend to use a lot of color. I get the feeling that, you know, obviously some of your art, like that interactive art project, was to kind of bring people together. But like your work seems to kind of try to invoke the feeling of joy. I mean, ultimately, do you feel like that's kind of something that you want people to get out of your art?
You know, I think so. It's not something I feel like I consciously, it's not really something I set out to do, and it really just kind of comes out in the artwork. And in some ways, I think I attribute Alaska to that. I really had this sense, you know, the first couple winters, especially with the dark, which was new to me growing up in the Midwest. And, you know, wherever you grow up, it really kind of sets your compass for what you expect seasonally, right? So it really does kind of throw you off with the dark.
Whoa.
But the weird thing was like, I loved it. I loved the winter, and I loved the feeling of being like the spark of life in this like, you know, dead landscape. It made me feel extremely productive to wake up at 11 o'clock and then it be dark by 3 and be like, well, that's a day. Like, you know, I felt really great in that. Something about that really made me feel like, bah, like this explosion of color. And
yeah, well, I mean, it's like you're being proactive with just like adding light and color into your life in a dark period.
Yeah, yeah. And also I think, you know, the dark, it's really this, I don't know if a lot of us really realize this, but it's like this great opportunity to play with the dark. I mean, I did so much fun stuff with light and shadows with the kids during these winters, and it's stuff that I had never really gotten into before, but there was just so much opportunity to do that now, right?
Outside of, you know, this other stuff, the last few years you've done a handful of murals around Matsu Valley, but these are kind of unique murals. You're not painting a big thing on the wall. Could you talk about some of these things that you've done?
So this was such a random thing. I think it was in 2022 when I first started talking to someone about this, and it was an animal hospital in Palmer, and so they had this kind of unique problem, which was they had this beautiful new waiting room with a huge echo problem. And if we're talking about an animal hospital, you can imagine like barking dogs, and like it was bad. So this beautiful blank canvas, you know, big white walls, and we want something, you know, artistic and not so cold and clinical. There was a lot of like stainless steel everywhere and things. And as you know, sound panels can be a little bit boring. It's kind of like one color, a lot of geometric forms.
Yeah, and black or gray.
Yes, yeah. So I think they wanted to avoid that really clinical feeling. So it's like, how do we solve this echo problem while putting something out here that really can sort of calm the nerves of someone sitting with, you know, their dog who needs to be seen and things like that. So it was really fun to brainstorm that. And we found this material, which is like, and it's sold again to like, you know, universities and things for their libraries to help mitigate the sound. And it's the kind of a felt composite board. So like wool felt mixed with plastic, a lot of recycled plastic. And it's thinnish. It's like a quarter of an inch to a half an inch thick. But what I found working with the samples that they gave me was that I was able to use a couple different tools to shape it and put it together just like you would like a painted mural, right? So we could make these big free-flowing forms. We could incorporate negative space with these cool textural elements. But it was really like starting from scratch. Like I had never worked with this before. There were no like guides anywhere for how to use it this way. But yeah, it's been a really fun challenge. So it went from that waiting room, which turned out pretty well, to the elementary school library in Chugiak, and then we just finished the Wasilla Public Library in their children's area, and right now I'm working on a conference room in Palmer, but yeah.
How does that make you feel to kind of have your art also serve this very practical functionality?
It's like, so cool, right? I mean, it kind of takes me back to sort of this like Midwestern sense of at least I'm doing something, right?
Gotta get it done. We need this done.
Like, it's useful. So I think it really satisfies that part of me. And also, it's just been really cool to jump into that side of things. Like, I've learned so much about acoustics and like these ratings that they give materials for how much they absorb sounds. And I'm so much more aware of it when I'm walking around now. And just how it influences us, like the sound environment we're in. I mean, we may not think about it, but it can make a huge difference in our mood and our mindset if it's like a chaotic sort of echoey environment versus the sound studio, which is like eerily quiet. But yeah, it's just been really cool.
So like, obviously your work is diverse. I feel like just scrolling through your Instagram, like, okay, that's something different. What's that? That's something different. But like, what types of materials maybe do you lean towards or prefer working with? Or are you just kind of always trying to chase something new, different ways to, you know, approach a different medium?
Yeah, I definitely don't feel boxed into any medium. I mean, I do a lot of painting. I've done ceramic work. And I think a lot of that, too, is like a little bit of my naivete, and a little bit of hubris, right? Which is like, let me try this out. Like, I don't know, just this very sense of like, this very strong sense of like, life is short and whatever's in front of me, like I'm going to play with. So I got into paper, and I think that is one material I am definitely repeatedly drawn to. And part of it's just because there's so much of it everywhere. And part of that goes back to teaching and knowing copy machines and having piles of discarded handouts from my classes. So I think it really does come back to that just sort of practical sense of like what's in front of me and how can I manipulate this. So paper is one I definitely come back to a lot.
I feel like you must find writing fulfilling in some way. Otherwise, you wouldn't keep doing it, be teaching it, stuff like that. But I mean, do you find writing and maybe the visual art fulfill you in separate ways, but maybe like necessary ways, like writing feeds this part of my soul, art feeds this part
of
my soul, is it the same thing?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not sure. So with writing, I don't know. I think I've always been the kind of person who I definitely feel more comfortable expressing myself in writing versus speaking. I've never felt especially confident speaking. I have kind of a quiet voice too, so I'm one of those people who are always like, what? So I feel really self-conscious when I speak, but when I write, I feel much more comfortable and I can kind of rearrange things. So I think writing-wise, though, I don't feel like I'm the best creative writer. In my creative writing pursuits, I've never felt really satisfied with what I produced. So I kind of gave up on the sense of, like, this is something I want to put out in the world. I feel kind of embarrassed in my creative writing.
Or maybe it's just, like, when it becomes a career as well, that can kind of maybe diminish some of that creativity
or
something.
Maybe. I did enjoy my time, like, doing the freelance writing, and I haven't completely given up on that, but I just found more satisfaction there sort of interviewing others and getting their stories out than I did sort of creating my own story.
That's where I'm at. I totally hear you.
Yeah. So, and then with teaching, it's the same idea. Like, I feel very happy to help a student sort of develop their writing voice and comfort and confidence with writing. So that's where I found myself with writing.
Exciting news. Can you tell me about the Rasmussen grant that you received?
Yes. Gosh, I'm so appreciative and excited about that. So it was a project that was really started a couple years ago. I had reached out to David Bechkol, who works with the National Park Service. And I had this idea of they do this amazing work out there where they collect sound data and they use it. And I learned so much from this. Like, they use it for all sorts of applications, one of which being just sort of to see how the environment changes year to year. It's like another way to sort of assess just environmental changes, right?
Yeah.
So I was fascinated by this, and I was fascinated by these things that they create, which are spectrograms, and they're basically visual representations of these sounds, the sound data that they're collecting. So if you've ever seen one, they're kind of like, they look like these jagged landscapes, right? It's showing the volume and it's showing the pitch, and they're just really fun to watch. They're animated a lot of times. And so I started playing with this. I started making these like tiny recordings at home. One time I recorded like popcorn popping, and I found an app where it would make like kind of a really basic spectrogram. But I was like, I wonder what this would look like in a paper sculpture. And so I started to create these tiny little paper sculptures to just sort of encapsulate this little sound moment, you know, of this popcorn popping. I had a video of my dog snoring. And it was so fun to like compare those two, right? The popcorn popping was just all over the place. And then the dog snoring was this really rhythmic kind of slow wave, lower pitched. So that's kind of how that started. But yeah, David was very supportive. I went out to Denali with him and we kind of hiked off grid, and he showed me how he collects the data, and like it was just the coolest thing ever. So
some, like, recording stations out there.
Yes, like in the middle of nowhere, and it felt like the secretive thing, right? Because they don't want people to mess with them.
Totally.
So that was really fun. And so we collected this data, and then what I had done, so obviously the recordings are going like all summer, and then when I went home, you know, to the valley, I was just making these intermittent recordings around the house, you know, walks with the kids or wind blowing through the trees or like a noisy, you know, drive-through event or something. And the idea was like, you know, I wonder what it sounds like in Denali, you know, at our little station right now, you know, like what's the sound there versus this moment here, and what do those look like side by side visually. So the project is basically going to be a set of sculptures, a set of like kind of a visual art exhibit to look at different moments in sound simultaneously in spectrogram form.
we're looking at sound visually in like sculpture form. That's so cool.
And I want to have the recordings with them so that the viewer can sort of, you know, see, kind of hear what they're seeing. So I'm hoping that will work out.
Do you think that this may be opening up more opportunities to kind of do more maybe science adjacent artwork, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's definitely something I'm drawn to, kind of the science and art interplay. But I also don't, in some ways, I feel like there's a little bit of pressure in Alaska to go in that direction. You know, obviously we're very conservation focused, which I think is amazing. But I want to avoid that just a little bit, at least any feeling of like pressure to have to, I don't know, save anything with my art, really. I think it's more of like, I just want to sort of observe, right? And sort of share what these observations, and let the viewer kind of decide from there.
It sounds like you're somebody that kind of just needs to keep moving a bit and like, I don't know, kind of mixing it up quite a bit. I can't imagine you get stuck in too many artistic routines, or do you?
No, it does go a little bit all over. But yeah, I think, as you said before, I think I really have this goal of like exploration and sort of community involvement and kind of exploring different senses and things too. So I'm not ruling out maybe this path of like this interplay of art and science. But for right now, I'm just kind of focusing on
But if you do, you'll probably be simultaneously doing something else. Addie, thank you so much for coming in. It was great to get to know you and hear about all your endeavors. Congratulations on the Rasmussen Award. And good luck with everything you've got coming up.
Thank you so much.
It's nice to be recognized for what we know. But please don't just throw us a bone. We are connected to complete systems. We feed ourselves from our home. Our knowledge, it comes from completeness. Completeness of being on the land. A land that has not yet been broken. At the comes from completeness. The completeness of being on the land. A land that has so much to teach us. If we would only stop and listen. Tech is not just anecdotal or quaint. Our traditions plug us directly into place. Ecologies that are functioning and alive. What a pleasure to be in this kind of space. From completeness, the completeness of being on the land, a land that has not yet been broken at the hands of greedy humans. From completeness, the completeness of being on the land, a land that has so much to teach us. If we would only stop and listen.
That was Alaska's Sunny Porch with Tech, or Traditional Ecological Knowledge. Before that was my conversation with Addie Studebaker. She's an artist based in the Mat-Su and is a Rasmussen Individual Artist Award recipient. We'll have links and more info on our website. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
Thanks for joining us today for Hometown Alaska, and thanks to our guests. Ammon Swenson produces this show. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Kim Sherry. Thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.